Folks, how are you doing tonight? It is wonderful to be here. I've been up since 3 o'clock this morning, your time. I did have a nap, thankfully. I flew out of Toronto at 7 o'clock this morning, which means I live in Burlington, so I got up at 4, Ontario time. So I've been up since 3 o'clock. So if I fall asleep in the middle of this, don't be offended. Anyway, my name is Mike Lugosch. I work for the Midwest Center for Stress and Anxiety, and we are an organization that specializes in the treatment of anxiety and depression. We have done so since 1983, and in the past 27 years, we have helped 1.2 million people overcome their struggles with anxiety and depression. We are a very unique organization, thank you so much, Pastor, in the sense that we don't deal with any other human condition. We don't do marriage counseling. When your teenager is acting like a teenager, don't call us. We don't know a thing about it. I might, because I used to be a youth pastor, but we only do anxiety and depression. And we believe that anxiety and depression are something that need specialization. So that is what we do. Folks, because my seminar is usually 2 hours, and I promised Pastor Martin I'd go a little shorter tonight because you probably don't want to stay here that long. So I want to just kind of cut to the chase and get into some of the meat and potatoes of my seminar, some good things that I can teach you that you can use to start to feel better. Now, we are in church tonight, and we are among friends and family, and I hope you feel comfortable being here tonight with this topic. And I'm going to ask this evening for shows of hands. It'll help keep you awake. And if you don't feel comfortable raising your hand, that's okay too, but it helps me to kind of understand who's here tonight. How many of you who are here have ever wrestled at some level in your life with anxiety or depression? I know I have. Absolutely. Folks, what is anxiety? Anxiety is defined as the uneasiness of mind and of body over something that you're worried about, concerned about, or afraid of. Anxiety is the physical, psychological, and emotional symptoms that you experience when you are afraid of something, when you're worried about something, when you're uneasy about something. Common symptoms for anxiety: headaches, muscle tension, chest pains. A very high percentage of people who call an ambulance thinking they're having a heart attack are actually having an anxiety or a panic attack. A friend of mine told me that. He is an ambulance attendant, and he says all the time we arrive at someone's house, they think they're having a heart attack. We put them in the truck and we take them to the hospital and they were just having an anxiety attack. Shortness of breath, feeling sick to your stomach, inner nervousness, shaking hands, tiredness, fatigue, not able to sleep well. Is there anyone here tonight who doesn't sleep well? That's very common. But some people with anxiety and depression have the opposite problem. They sleep too much. I understand that. When I had anxiety and depression, because I'm a recovered anxiety and depression sufferer, when I had anxiety and depression in 1990, I slept 12 to 14 hours a day. Why? Because when I was asleep, I didn't feel anxious or depressed. So for me, sleep was an avoidance behavior for how horrible I felt when I was awake. Emotional symptoms that come with anxiety and depression: feeling easily overwhelmed, feeling filled with fear, feeling like you're going to break down and cry for no apparent reason, sometimes even feeling a little bit like you're losing your mind. So those are some of the symptoms that come with anxiety. Now, depression, you'll hear me use anxiety and depression synonymously. I use them together all the time. And people say, why do you do that? Because 85% of people who have anxiety also have depression. And 85% of people who have depression also have anxiety. Only 15% of people who struggle have only one or only the other. They are found, in most cases, together, and the skills we teach are for both. The skills you're going to hear about tonight work equally as well for anxiety as well as for depression. Okay? Depression, what is that? It's a sense of helplessness and hopelessness and darkness and overwhelmment. It's a loss of interest in things you used to enjoy. For someone who's depressed, the smallest of tasks is overwhelming, such as getting out of bed, having a shower, making your breakfast. When you're struggling with depression, those simple tasks are absolutely overwhelming, and difficult tasks are an impossibility. Now, sorry, I'm just trying to think of where to go because I just want to use the best use of my time. Let's talk about the four main reasons why people suffer with anxiety and depression. Reason number one, genetics. This condition runs in families. If you are here tonight and you struggle with anxiety or depression, I bet you know somebody in your family who also struggles with anxiety or depression. They have actually isolated a gene that is commonly found in anxious and depressed people. So folks, this condition is not your fault. It's not a weakness of character. It's not an inability to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. It is a true medical condition that you were born with a genetic predisposition to struggle with. Now, because you have a genetic predisposition, does that mean you can't get better? Not at all. Probably 90% of the people we have helped have had a genetic predisposition to this condition, and I know I do. Anxiety and depression is all over my father's side of the family. Half of my cousins on my dad's side of the family are on antidepressants. So it's genetic. Another reason we struggle with anxiety and depression, environmental. You may have been influenced by someone who was anxious or depressed. If your mom was a worrier, what would you learn to do? Worry. If your dad was an overreactor, what would you learn to do? Overreact. Now, I know what you're all going to do. You're all going to go home tonight and you're going to call your mom. I knew this was your fault. Yes, we do learn some of these things from... Sorry, folks. My back is acting up on me here. We do learn some of these things from our parents, but that's okay. I think the important thing is that we don't pass it on to our next generation. That's what's more interest to me. My wife and I, we have two young children. Our son is Ethan. He is 13. And our daughter is Alexandra. She turns 12 in about 2 weeks. What's important to me is that I don't pass on anxiety and depression to my kids. Third reason we have anxiety and depression is biochemical. Now, when I say biochemical, I am not talking about chemical imbalances in the brain. I'm talking about the power of a thought to produce chemicals inside of your mind and in your body. I'm going to show you what I mean. I am going to ask you to close your eyes. I'm going to ask you to imagine going to your local grocery store. Go over to the fresh produce section and pick up a nice, big, juicy, yellow lemon. Take your lemon home. Cut it in half with a sharp knife. Pick up half of that lemon. Bring it to your mouth. Open as wide as you can and squeeze that sucker for all you're worth. Fill your entire mouth with lemon juice. Now open your eyes. Do any of you have more moisture in your mouth right now than you did 2 minutes ago? Yes. There's not a single lemon in this room, yet you're all sucking back saliva. That's biochemical. The power of a thought. You see, at the Midwest Center for Stress and Anxiety, we teach cognitive behavioral therapy. Cognitive behavioral therapy has been clinically proven to be the most effective form of therapy for anxiety and depression. What is it? It is simply this. If you change the way you think, you will change the way you feel. The premise of cognitive behavioral therapy is you cannot feel anxious or depressed without a thought being attached to it. And if you can recognize that thought, which we'll teach you how to do, and you can change that thought, you will feel differently. You see, negative, worrisome, fearful, overreactive, catastrophizing thoughts make you feel anxious and depressed. But the opposite is also true. Soothing, comforting, encouraging, inspiring, positive thoughts, they make you feel relaxed and calm and give you an overall sense of well-being. The power of a thought. Scripture says, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And that's exactly what we teach, how to renew your mind. Pastor Martin read a scripture, whatever is lovely, whatever is true, I forgot the details of that scripture. Think on such things. Okay, fourth reason we have anxiety and depression is personality traits. There are many personality traits that are common to anxious, depressed people, such as perfectionism. Do we have any perfectionists here tonight? Your favorite song is I Did It My Way. You're the kind of person who if someone puts the dishes in the dishwasher the wrong way, you'll take them all back out again. Why? Put them back in the right way. Does anyone tonight have the toilet paper fetish? Do you know what that is? You go to your friend's house to use the washroom. You reach for the toilet paper and find it's on the roll the wrong way. And you actually take it off and turn it around and put it back on the right way. Has anyone here ever done this? Folks, do you know what makes me anxious when I go to my friend's house? When I realize too late that there is no toilet paper. Perfectionism is all about control. Trying to control things that are out of your control. Ever heard of the Serenity Prayer? Dear Lord, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I have a slight twist to the Serenity Prayer. Are you ready? Dear Lord, grant me the serenity to accept the person I cannot change, the courage to change the person that I can, and the wisdom to know that that person that I can change is my spouse. No? That's why I've been married 4 times. I'm just kidding. Pastor Martin just had a heart attack. No, my wife and I, we just celebrated our 15th wedding anniversary. But you can't change anyone else. You can only change yourself. And you want a recipe for anxiety? Try to change another human being. That'll make you anxious. The more we let go of control, the more we will feel in control. Another personality trait, highly analytical, the need to figure everything out. Is anyone here tonight highly analytical? You need to understand everything. The word that commonly goes through the mind of a highly analytical person is why. It's a nice day out today. Why? You look nice today. Why? 1 + 1 = 2. Why? And we overanalyze things to the point of what I call mental confusion, where things don't even make sense anymore. We are also obsessive thinkers. Our mind gets stuck on a certain thought and goes around and around and around and around. And the more you try to not think of that thought, the more you will end up thinking about it. We are obsessive thinkers. The fourth personality trait is a trait that many of you tonight can relate to. It is worry. Are there any worriers here tonight? Yes. What is worry? Worry is obsessive negative thinking. Thinking negatively over and over and over about a specific situation. Worry is the greatest waste of thought, time, and energy known to the human race. How many of you agree with this statement? 90% of the things we worry about never actually happen. Anyone agree with that? It's true, isn't it? So if 90% of the things we worry about never happen, why do we bother worrying about them? Well, I'll give you three reasons we worry. Reason number one, we believe that worrying accomplishes something. What we do is we confuse worrying and problem solving. You see, they're very different. To worry is to focus on the problem. To problem solve is to focus on a solution. Don't confuse the two. You see, worrying doesn't actually accomplish anything. Problem solving does. I want to share a scripture with you, just to encourage you that the Lord doesn't want us to worry, just in case you thought he did. Matthew 6:25, therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more important than food, and the body more important than clothes? Look at the birds in the air, they do not sow or reap or stow away in barns, yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Who of you by worrying can add a single hour to your life? It's not God's desire that we would worry. It's God's desire that we would have peace in our mind. It's God's desire that we would have freedom in our thoughts. Another reason we worry is we believe that if we worry about it, somehow it's less likely to happen. Almost like worrying gives you a sense of control over the situation. Folks, what you're worried about is either going to happen or it's not going to happen, whether you worry about it or whether you don't. Third reason we worry, habit. Some of you who are here tonight are habitual worriers. What is a habitual worrier? Someone who goes from one worry to the next. You're worried about a problem over here, it rectifies itself, you immediately start worrying about a problem over here. It rectifies itself, you start to worry about a problem over here. Do you know why being a habitual worrier is such a dangerous thing? Because you will never run out of things to worry about. You will never run out of things to worry about. There is always something to worry about. Whether it be your family, whether it be your job, whether it be the economy, whether it be war, there's no end to it. I'm going to teach you how to overcome worry. You see, at the Midwest Center for Stress and Anxiety, we believe that 25% of all anxiety and depression comes from worry. So if I can teach you how to worry less, I'm going to lower your stress levels, I'm going to lower your anxiety, and I'm going to help you better deal with if you have depression. Okay, let's talk about three ways to deal with worry. The first way to deal with worry is a three-step process. The example we're going to look at is worried about losing your job. Worried about losing your job. Something most of us at some point in our life have worried about. I know I have. Okay, what's the first step? Step number one, ask yourself a question. What's the worst case scenario? What's the worst thing that could happen? You lose your job. Has anyone ever lost their job in history before you? Yeah. Did they live through it? Yes. Did they eventually find another job? Yes. Do you know what's interesting about losing your job? Is when we worry about losing our job, we worry about being out of work, not having income. But do you know some people lose their job and they end up finding a better one? There's a different take on the situation, isn't it? Anyone here ever heard of Lee Iacocca? Lee Iacocca was a vice president with Ford. They fired him. He went into a depression. 5 years later, he was president and CEO of Chrysler Corporation, and he is credited with having saved Chrysler from bankruptcy. He got a better job. Isn't that interesting? So the first question is, what's the worst case scenario? The worst case scenario is you lose your job, folks. You're not going to die. No one's going to take your family away from you. They're not going to put you in prison. You lose your job. You see, I believe that worrying about losing your job is more mentally, emotionally, and physiologically damaging than losing your job. Do you know why? Because if you lose your job, do you know what will happen? All of your energy will go into finding a new job. You'll become consumed in the act of looking for a new job. But when you worry about losing your job, there's nothing to fix because you haven't lost your job yet. So you spin in fear. I want you to remember something. If you remember nothing else that I say tonight, please remember this next statement. I love to say that because everyone wakes up when you say that. All the heads pop up. What's this nugget of truth he's going to teach us? Do you know what I've learned in 17 years of helping people with anxiety and depression and stress? Do you know what I've learned? I've learned that the brain is an exaggerator. The brain is an exaggerator. Ever been worried about something? Had it happen to find it wasn't nearly as bad as you thought it would be? Anyone ever had that experience? I know I have. Why? Because the brain exaggerates. Have you ever looked forward to something positive? Dinner out, going to a party, a vacation. Ever looked forward to something to find when you got there it wasn't nearly as good as you thought it would be? Yeah. Why? Because the brain's an exaggerator. It makes bad things out to be worse than they really are, and it makes good things out to be better than they really are. Have you ever heard people talk about the good old days? Do you know what? They weren't that good. People just remember them with exaggeration and fondness. Oh, life was better back then. Really? Why? Just because you think it was. Folks, the next time you feel stressed, the next time you feel anxious, the next time you worry about something, remind yourself of truth. The brain is an exaggerator, and my brain is making this situation out to be worse than it really is. Remember I said that I believe that losing your job is actually less psychologically and emotionally damaging than worrying about losing your job? Do you know why? Because when something in your life bad happens, what happens is you go into problem-solving mode, and all of your energy is spent in problem-solving mode, working on fixing the problem. And you become consumed by doing that. But when you worry, you become consumed by fear. And fear is paralyzing. I want to share a story with you. About a year ago, my family buried a very special man. He was my great uncle Harold. Harold was a veteran of the Second World War. In the Second World War, Harold flew, he was the pilot of a Lancaster bomber. This is how it worked. If you flew 25 successful missions, you got to go home. Has anyone here ever seen the movie Memphis Belle? Very similar to the story of my great uncle Harold. On Harold's 17th mission, he was shot down over France. Now you have to envision this with me, okay? It's the middle of the night. It is pitch black out. You are in a plane and people are shooting at you and they hit you. And you lose all your instrumentation and the plane that you are piloting starts to immediately do a nosedive, plummeting to the earth. He escaped out a window with a parachute. Coming down, his parachute got hung up in a tree, and he's hanging 10 feet from the ground, hung up in a tree. He cuts himself down. He's in France, and he has no idea where he is, and it's wartime. He finds a bush, hides in the bush, decides in the morning he'll wake up and decide what to do. He's woken in the morning to the sound of boots marching up and down a road about 15 feet from the bush he was hiding in. Those boots are owned by German soldiers. He realizes he is behind enemy lines and he's not in a very good position. For fear of being captured, he spends the next week hiding in that bush. No water, no food. He realizes he's going to die if he doesn't leave his bush and try to find help. And he comes to the conclusion, even if I'm captured, I stand a greater likelihood of surviving than if I stay in this bush and starve to death. So one morning, he gets up his gusto and he says, okay, and he starts to walk down that road. And coming down the road is a man on a motorcycle. The man happens to be a French priest. The French priest puts my great uncle Harold on the back of the motorcycle and takes him into the local town. The French priest takes my great uncle to his house, feeds him, nourishes him, brings him back to health. My great uncle then joins the French underground. He teaches French farmhands how to use guns, and he leads them on night raids against the Germans. He's missing in action for 4 months, presumed dead. He comes home to Toronto to a hero's welcome. He's on the front page of the Globe and Mail with my mom, who was 3 years of age, on his shoulders. Do you know how old Harold was? 18. Why do I share that story with you? You're probably thinking, what does this have to do with anxiety and depression? You see, if you told my great uncle Harold what he was going to have to live through, he would be so paralyzed with fear that you would never get him on a plane from Canada to Britain to join the Air Force. If you told him what he was going to have to live through, you wouldn't get him out of bed. He'd be hiding under the sheets. He'd be so paralyzed with fear. But Harold didn't worry about it. He just did it. You see, human beings are fearfully and wonderfully made and are incredibly able. You would be amazed what you could deal with if you had to. But when we worry, we become paralyzed by fear and overwhelmed by it. And sodium lactate and cortisol and adrenaline flood through your system, paralyzing you. A little phrase that I used when I was getting better from my anxiety and depression was this: deal with it. Don't dwell on it. So the first step is, what's the worst case scenario? Second step, mentally accept the worst case scenario. I want you to become so comfortable with the thought of losing your job that you don't even care if you lose your job. I want you to become so comfortable with the thought of losing your job that you walk to work every day with a swagger. Go ahead, fire me. I don't care. Now, how are you going to accomplish that? By sitting down and writing on a piece of paper exactly what you would do if you lost your job. Do you know what I would do? The first thing I'd do if I lost my job? I would redo my resume. I would send my resume out across the internet. I would knock on the doors of companies who could possibly hire someone with my skills. Folks, I'm a very proactive person. A friend of mine used to teach people who lost their jobs how to find new ones. And do you know what he said to them? Treat looking for a job like a job. Get up at 7 o'clock every morning. Don't sleep until noon. Get up at 7 o'clock every morning. Have a shower. Put your best clothes on. Have breakfast. And at 9 o'clock, you go to wherever you're going to go and start working on looking for a job. At 5 o'clock, when the day's done, you are finished. Don't think about looking for a new job. Don't worry about looking for a new job. May you not even think about it until 9 o'clock the next morning. Compartmentalize your life. You see, when you are doing something proactively, you become consumed by it. And when you become consumed by it, all the worry goes away and you become consumed by what you're doing. So the second step is to mentally accept the worst case scenario. Third step, do everything in your power to prevent the worst case scenario. How do you do that? You see, do you know that worrying about losing your job increases the odds that you'll lose your job? Now you may think, why is that? I'll tell you. If you go to work every day worried about losing your job, what are two things that are common to someone who is worried? Poor concentration and poor focus. So if you go to work every day with poor concentration and poor focus because you're worried about losing your job, how good of a job do you think you're doing? Probably a pretty lousy one. How can you do your job well with poor concentration and poor focus? As soon as you can mentally accept the worst case scenario, your concentration will come back. Your focus will come back. And you can do the best you can. You can do the best you can to do the best job that you can, which decreases the odds of getting fired. There's a three-step process. What's the worst case scenario? Mentally accept it. Do everything in your power to prevent it. Okay? Now, that three-step process doesn't work for all situations. It works for many, but not all. You see, when I worry about something happening to my wife or kids, that three-step process doesn't work. Because the second step is to mentally accept the worst-case scenario. I can't mentally accept something terrible happening to my wife or kids. Folks, Burlington, Ontario has seen its share of tragedy. Carla Homolka and, my mind's gone blank, what was his name? Paul Bernardo. That lovely Canadian couple. Paul Bernardo and Carla Homolka took both of those girls from Burlington. One of those girls that they took was taken 5 minutes north of my house. If you go up Brant Street from my house, you'll come to a Max Milk. Outside that Max Milk, they took one of those girls. The other girl was taken 5 minutes east of my house. She was walking home from her part-time job at Cedar Springs Fitness and Racquet Club. I used to belong there. You see, folks, when I'm on the road, like I am now, I'm here till, I don't fly home till Saturday night. One of the things as a father that's something I take very seriously, yes, I'm a provider, spiritual head of the home, but one of the things that I take very seriously as a father is to be a protector of my family. I pity the person who wishes to harm my wife or children because they will bear the fullness of my wrath. I would die for my wife and children. I think any parent would. But you know what? When I'm here in Winnipeg, I can't protect my wife and children. I'm not there. So when those terrible things go through our mind that we can't do that first technique, the three steps, we can't mentally accept the worst case scenario. It's too scary. It's too horrible. It's too treacherous. That leads us to the next skill. The second skill I'm going to teach you on how to deal with worry is the oldest skill known to the human race. Anyone know what it is? Prayer. Prayer. Be anxious for nothing, but in all things, through prayer and petition, make your request known to God. Every day I'm on the road, folks, I pray for my family. Because I ask Jesus, I say, Jesus, I say, Lord, I can't take care of them. I'm not there. I need you to do that for me. And he does that even when I am there, but especially when I'm not. And I don't worry about my wife and kids when I'm on the road, because I trust that God will take care of them. Prayer is so powerful that a study was done by a secular university in the United States. What does secular mean? Non-religious. A non-religious university did a study on prayer. And do you know what they found? They found that people who prayed on a regular basis had a lower incidence of stress, anxiety, and depression. Why? Because we give our worries over to someone who is greater than our worry. Folks, there's nothing you will ever worry about that is too big for God. The God that I serve spoke creation into existence. My wife and I are trying to raise our children as Christians. And we have wonderful kids. Everyone has wonderful kids. And I have wonderful kids. And my kids are go to public school, so they're taught about evolution. And I said to my son, Ethan, just recently, I said, son, do you know how intricate the human body is? I said, do you know how perfectly your body has to work for you to be healthy? The slightest thing goes wrong and you become very ill. The human body is beyond comprehension. Talk to anyone in the medical field. They'll tell you it is unbelievable. I said, Ethan, do you think that happened by accident? I said, what's the odds, son, that this body that is so perfect just happened by accident? And do you know what accident would be? Me having an arm coming out of my ear. That would be accident. And he goes, yeah, I know, Dad. They're crazy, aren't they? Folks, pray. Pray, pray, pray. But there's only one problem with prayer, and the problem is not with God. The problem is with us. Do you know what the problem with prayer is? What we often do is we pray about something, and then 5 minutes later, we take it back again. And we start to worry about it all over again. Let me teach you how to not do that. That leads us to our third technique. The third technique on how to deal with worry is to not entertain it. What I'm asking you to do, folks, is to not think about it. Now, this is a real tricky one. Have you ever tried to not think of something? As soon as you try to not think of it, you're thinking about it. You can't not think of something. It's physically impossible to not think of something. I want you all to not think about a pink elephant. What are you all thinking about? A pink elephant. You can't not think of something. You see, What I want you to learn to do is to live in the precious present moment. To live in the precious present moment. In the precious present moment, there is no fear, there is no worry, there is no anxiety, there is no stress, there is no depression. Athletes call it being in the zone, where you're completely consumed by what you're doing. Have any of you ever had this happen? You were so consumed by what you were doing that 30 minutes or an hour went by like that. Have you ever had that experience? Ever looked up at a clock and went, whoa, where'd that hour go? For that period of time, you were in the precious present moment. You were completely consumed by what you were doing. Now let me ask you a question. If you can think back to that situation, during that time, were you anxious or depressed? No, you weren't. There is no anxiety, there's no stress, there's no depression in the precious present moment. You see, I treat worrisome thoughts. Let me give you some percentages, okay? 5% of the worries that go through my head, I pray about. That may sound low, but I'll tell you why. It's only 5%. 5% of the worries that go through my head, I use that three-step process. What's the worst case scenario? Mentally accept it. Do everything you can to prevent it. 90% of the worries that go through my head, I just don't entertain them. You see, I deal with worry the same way I deal with door-to-door salesmen. I was at home one day. There was a knock on my front door. I went to the living room, peeled back the drapes, and saw a man standing on my front porch with a vacuum cleaner. I quickly knew what he wanted. He wanted to sell me a vacuum cleaner. Well, I have a vacuum cleaner, and my wife and I use it on an annual basis. If she knew I said that, she would kill me. And we have a good vacuum cleaner. It's a SIBO, made in Germany. My wife and I have a theory in life. Do you know what our theory is? We are too poor to buy junk. I know a man who's a painter, house painter from Poland, and he taught me this. He said, Mike, back in Poland, he said, my priest used to say to me, because he worked as a painter back in Poland, he said, my priest used to say to me, John, you're too poor to buy cheap tools. What does he mean? Folks, you buy a cheap paintbrush for $3, you'll be coming back to that store 3 days later to buy another cheap paintbrush for another $3. You spend $25 on a pretty paintbrush. If you take care of it, wash it properly after every time you use it, you'll use that paintbrush for a year. In the long run, what's the better deal? The good one. So my wife and I spent $800 on a vacuum cleaner, and we expect it to last us 25 years. So when that man came to my front door looking to sell me a vacuum cleaner, I wasn't interested. No matter how good his vacuum cleaner was, I wasn't going to buy it. So as I went to open the door, I thought to myself, if I open the door, he is going to suck me in. Pardon the pun. He's going to tell me all the reasons why I should get rid of my vacuum cleaner and buy his. Now, my fear was not that he would convince me to buy his vacuum cleaner. That was never going to happen. My concern was that he was going to waste the next 5 minutes of my day, as I politely told him I wasn't interested, that he was going to waste the next 5 minutes of my day me telling him that I'm not interested. Because every time I tell him I'm not interested, he's going to tell me why I should be. So I made a decision. My decision was, I'm not going to open the door. Small problem. When I pulled back the drapes, he stared at me. He clearly knew I was home. And he knocked, and he knocked, and he knocked. And after about a minute, he finally went away. That's how I treat negative, worrisome, fearful thoughts. I don't open the door. I talk to my thoughts objectively. And do you know what I say to them? I know what you are. You're just a worry. Well, I know that 90% of the things I worry never happen. And if I don't entertain you, you will go away. So I don't entertain them. I tell my thoughts, you see, you can't run from your thoughts. As soon as you start to run from a worry or a fear, it gets stronger. By running from it, you are feeding it. You can't fight with them either. By fighting with them, you are feeding them. I say to my thoughts, you can sit in the back of my head as long as you want. Go ahead, pull up a chair, put on a pot of coffee. I don't care. You can stay in the back of my head as long as you want. I've got things to do. And I go get busy doing something else, and guess what happens? That thought goes away. You see, the more you entertain a worry, the more you will entertain it. Ever heard of a term called neuropathways? Neuropathways are exactly that. They are pathways in your brain. How many of you know your name? How many of you know your name? You've never asked yourself this question, but why do you know your name? Because you have told people for so long what your name is, that the neural pathway in your brain where your name is really, really deep. Now, how many of you have ever forgotten something? I have, and I know you all have too. Why? Because the neural pathway in your brain is very shallow, and it fades away. The more you entertain a worry, the more you will entertain it. Because you'll make the neural pathway deeper and deeper and deeper every time you entertain it. The more you choose to not entertain it, the more it will lose power in your brain and start to fade away. And you will come to the point where you won't even think about it anymore. So don't entertain thoughts, folks. You can't run from them and you can't fight with them. Both of those things will feed them. Speak to your thoughts and say, I know what you are. You are just a worry. And 90% of you are not true. So sit in the back of my brain as long as you want. I've got things to do. Now, the last technique I want to teach you on how to live in the moment is to use your five senses. Whenever a worry comes into your mind and you don't want to entertain it, what you want to do is drive yourself back into the precious present moment. How do you do that? Use your five senses. Right here, right now, what do I hear? What do I see? What do I smell? What do I taste? What do I feel? Think of five answers to each of those five questions. So what are five things that I see? What are five things that I hear? What are five things that I smell? Five things that I taste? Five things that I feel? It'll take you 1 minute to do that. And by the time you're done it, you have done it, it will have driven your mind back into the precious present moment, which is free of worry, of stress, of anxiety, and of depression. Okay, let's talk about realistic expectations. We at the Midwest Center estimate that 25% of anxiety and depression and stress come from unrealistic expectations. Every time you set yourself up with an unrealistic expectation, you set yourself up for feelings of failure. If your expectations are unrealistic, you failed before you even started. Don't even bother to start. You already failed if your expectations are not realistic. Let me give you an example. I was in my office one day. I had 10 things to get done. I wrote them down in my day timer. At the end of the day, I only got 6 things done. Human nature being what it is, I focused on the 6 things, on the 4 things I didn't get finished. I left my office discouraged and frustrated. And I left my office discouraged and frustrated that I didn't get those things done. The next day I went down to my office and I had 8 things I had to get done. So I decided to do something differently. Do what differently? I decided to realign my expectations. So what I did was I took the 8 things I had to get done, I wrote them on a piece of paper. I then itemized them in order of priority. What's the most important thing that has to get done today? I put a number 1 beside it. What's the next most important thing? Number 2, all the way through to number 8. I took the top 5 of those 8 things and put them on today's daytimer list. I turned the page and put the bottom 3 on tomorrow. I once again got 6 things done. I got everything done from today's list and 1 done from tomorrow's. How do you think I felt? I felt great. I felt encouraged, inspired, positive. I remember thinking to myself, if this keeps up, I'll be golfing by Friday. Both days, I got 6 things done. One day I was frustrated and discouraged. The other day I was happy, encouraged, elated, in a great mood. And both days, my performance was the same. Expectations change everything. A lot of our unrealistic expectations come in the form of a word I call should. Should statements lead to guilt and shame. And guilt and shame are terrible motivators. Let's look at some should statements. I should be happy. Is that realistic? Is anyone happy all the time? Have you ever met somebody who's happy all the time? Are they not the most irritating people? It's not realistic to be happy all the time. We all have days, even those who do not struggle with anxiety or depression, everyone has days where they feel flat, humdrum, they go to work with no motivation. We all feel that way from time to time. That's normal. Another should. People should appreciate me. How do you feel if you do something for someone and they don't appreciate it? Probably discouraged. Well, if you do something for someone and they don't appreciate it, I want you to learn how to appreciate yourself, how to pat yourself on the back, not in a proud way, but just in a healthy way, and just say to yourself, you did something good today, Mike. You should feel good about what you did. Not proud, just a healthy feeling of satisfaction that you did something for someone else, even though they didn't seem to appreciate it. Another should. Let me keep track here. People should be nice to me. How do you feel if someone's not nice to you? Does it upset you? Do you take it personally? Do you internalize it? My wife and I have a little diner we go to at the end of our street. And we'll go there once every week or two. We know a lot of the waitresses there. And if I go there and one of the waitresses isn't very friendly to me, sometimes I'll say to her, are you having a bad day? And I'll say it as nicely as I can. And do you know what? Sometimes they'll say, do you know what I am? I'm having a bad day. I was late for work. My son is at home. He's sick. I'm not there to take care of him. Yeah, I'm kind of off today. And I say, that's fine. You're allowed to have a bad day. But sometimes I'll say, when I go to a restaurant, when I'm traveling, I'll say to a waiter or a waitress who's just not very friendly, I'll say, are you having a bad day? And they'll say, no, I'm always like this. Then I get up and go to another part of the restaurant. Another should. Life should be fair. Is life fair? No. Stephen Covey in the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People states, as soon as you can accept that life is not fair, you will become a happier person. Life is not fair. Another should. I should be liked by everyone. Any people pleasers here tonight? It's really important to you what other people think of you. Folks, there will always be people who don't like you. There will always be people who do like you. But people pleasers need everyone to like them. It's not realistic. You see, do you know why someone might not like you? Because when we meet someone for the first time, we all do this. We prejudge them. We look at them and we immediately decide what kind of person we think they are and we prejudge them. Folks, if you look like somebody's ex-husband, you're pretty much sunk. If every time he sees you, he thinks of alimony payments, you're probably not going to get along too well. You see, what's important is not what other people think of you. What's important is what you think of yourself. I would rather have everyone dislike me and me like myself than to have everyone like me and me not like myself. Do you know why? Because you live your life with yourself. I think it is biblical to have a healthy self-esteem. I don't think God gets any praise or pleasure out of us walking around going, oh, I'm a piece of dirt. No, you're not. You see, what I want you to do, if you don't like yourself, I have found that people who like themselves versus people who don't, I have found it comes down to one word. That word is called focus. I have found that people who like themselves focus on their strengths and downplay their weaknesses. And I have found that people who don't like themselves focus on their weaknesses and downplay their strengths. Everyone has strengths and weaknesses. Everyone. You do. You have strengths. There's not a person in this room tonight who doesn't have strengths. And there's not a person in this room tonight who doesn't have weaknesses. Folks, I have a part-time job working at a group home for developmentally handicapped men. These are people who couldn't go to school because they're too developmentally handicapped. They can't live on their own. They have to be taken care of by us. And even these people have strengths. I've not met one of them who doesn't. And these people are severely developmentally handicapped. And even they have strengths, let alone you. What I want you to do, if you don't like yourself, I'll tell you what I want you to do. When you go home tonight, I want you to take out a piece of paper and a pen. And I want you to write down all of your strengths on that piece of paper. I'm a good employee. I'm a good at my job. I'm a good husband. I'm a good wife. I'm a good mom. I'm a good dad. I'm a good brother. I'm a good sister. I'm a good son. I'm a good daughter. I'm a good cook. I'm a good gardener. I'm good with my hands. I'm sensitive. I'm kind. I'm caring. I'm giving. I'm generous. There's some examples for you. Write them all down. At the very top of the page, before you write any of your strengths, God loves me unconditionally, which he does, by the way. I used to think that God doesn't love me when I'm bad until I became a father. And I realized no matter whether my kids are good or bad, I still love them. I might be disappointed in them, but I still love them. Folks, God loves us at all times, even when we're bad. May not be happy about it, but he still loves us. At the very bottom of the page, I want you to put weaknesses, because you have them. And beside weaknesses, I want you to write down, nobody's good at everything. It's true. Nobody is. Do you know that Bill Gates has weaknesses? The guy's worth $50 billion. Have you seen his hair? Even Bill Gates has weaknesses. One of the wealthiest men in the world. Everyone has weaknesses. Nobody's good at everything. Now, I want you to take that piece of paper, and I want to take you to tape it to the mirror in your bathroom. And every morning, when you're getting dressed, when you're doing your hair, you're brushing your teeth, you're putting on your makeup, and guys, if you're putting on your makeup, we need to talk, okay? We have different problems going on if you're putting on your makeup. I want you to read all your strengths every morning, starting off with God loves me unconditionally, and start to read all your strengths. How long should you do that for? Until you start to believe it. Might be a week, might be a month, might be 6 months. Doesn't matter how long it takes. I have learned in my life, folks, that if you believe you are a success, you are a success. If you believe you are a failure, you are a failure. Now, I'm not saying you're a failure, but if you believe you're a failure in your mind, then to you, you are a failure. I have counseled thousands of people in the past 17 years. I have met people from all walks of life. Some of the happiest people I've ever met have low-paying jobs, have no stature in society, don't have much of a home to live in, drive an old beat-up car. But you know what I've found of some of these people that I've met? They're believers, and their life in their mind and heart has a purpose, and their life is spent in the service of God, and they are some of the happiest people I've ever met in my entire life. Folks, I've counseled people who are multimillionaires, who are some of the most unhappy people I've ever met in my life. I counseled a man in Montreal who owns 3 hotels in Montreal. Anyone here ever play Monopoly? The hotels, remember them? They're the big things, aren't they? I'd like to own 3 houses, let alone 3 hotels. This guy was the most miserable person I've ever met in my life, and he owns 3 hotels in Montreal. Don't think that money will buy you happiness, because it won't. Purpose will buy you happiness. If you wake up every day with a purpose to your life, you'll be a fulfilled, most likely a happy person as you set out to work on achieving that purpose. Let me share a bit of my story with you. 1990, I'm studying to be a minister at Eastern Pentecostal Bible College. Dating a young lady, we're talking about getting married. I start to worry, what if she's the wrong person for me to marry? What if I marry her and I'm unhappy? My worry gets a hold of me, and I can't shake it. Morning, noon, and night, I worry about whether or not I should marry this girl. I can't concentrate in class. I can't do my homework. I can't stop thinking about it. I started to experience physical, psychological, and emotional symptoms I've never experienced before. Headaches, muscle tension, chest pain, shortness of breath, sick to my stomach, my hands shook, my body trembled. Within 1 month, I went from a happy young man to an absolute mess, sleeping 12 to 14 hours a day, not socializing, having 3 to 5 panic attacks a week, having constant anxiety, clinical depression, and I'm a mess. It gets so bad that one day I just think of this girl and I throw up, physically throw up from just thinking of her. How's that for a Hallmark card? When I think of you, I throw up, but in a good way. And I trust that no one's ever gotten a card that says, when I think of you, I throw up. I do the only thing I can think of doing, and I end the relationship, thinking I'll get better. I get worse. I find other things to worry about, because I'm in what's called a state of anxiety, a state of worry. So my worry about this relationship transferred to other things. Start to see my first counselor, Dr. Bob Johnson, nice man, saw him for 8 weeks, didn't help me one iota. Start to see a second counselor, Dr. Ron Kidd, nice man, saw him for 6 or 8 weeks, didn't help me one iota. Start to see a third counselor. Somehow I graduated from that school, I don't know to this day how I graduated. Moved back to Mississauga to live with my mom and to see a fourth therapist, a lady who charged me $70 an hour. Anyone here ever paid for therapy? It's not cheap. $70 an hour, that was 1990. Today, $70 an hour is considered charity. Therapy today will run you anywhere from $80 to $150 an hour. See this lady for 10 weeks. I won't go into any details, but I can tell you she made me worse. I was worse 10 weeks after seeing her than when I was when I started. I'm a mess. I can't function. Spent half the day crying. Overwhelmed by stress, overwhelmed by anxiety, overwhelmed by depression. One night, a year into my struggles, it's midnight. I'm up in a fit of despair, wondering how I'm going to make it through another day. A program comes on television talking about anxiety and depression. They had a doctor, a psychologist, and a psychiatrist talking about how severely anxiety and depression can affect your life. They had some people sharing their story of what they'd been through and how they'd gotten better. They sounded just like me. At the end of the show, they listed a dozen symptoms across the TV screen. Sorry, 15. They listed 15 symptoms across the TV screen. I had 12 of the 15 symptoms. One of them was a woman's condition that I couldn't have no matter how bad I wanted it. Folks, no matter how bad I want it, I can't have menopause. And boy, do I want it. So I'm sitting there watching television, and I just realized I have 12 of the potential 14 symptoms they have just listed. And I realize these people have just described me to a T. If they understand me this well, maybe they can help me. So my mom, bless her heart, she purchases a program for me called Attacking Anxiety and Depression. It comes to me in the mail. I start to work through it. Within 4 weeks, I stopped having panic attacks. I haven't had a panic attack in 19 years. At that same 4 week point, my generalized anxiety was probably 25% better. The generalized anxiety is that uneasy, restless, shortness of breath, racing heart, feeling sick to your stomach, headache. 2 months into the program, my generalized anxiety is probably 50% better, and my depression is gone. When I finished the program, which took 15 weeks, I was probably 90% better. 3 months after finishing the program, I came to a point where I realized I am recovered. What does recovered mean? Does recovered mean you'll never feel anxious again? Does recovered mean you'll never feel down again? No, we don't call that recovered. We call that deceased. Every living, breathing human being will experience small amounts of stress, a little anxiety, will feel a little down from time to time. That's a normal part of life. But that's not what recovered is. Recovered is you control your stress, your anxiety, your depression. It doesn't control you. And the best part of recovered is this: you're not afraid of it. You see, what makes anxiety and depression and stress so horrible is they feed off themselves. They're self-feeding organisms. What does that mean? Most people with anxiety become anxious about being anxious. Most people with depression become depressed about being depressed. When you learn the skills to control the symptoms, you're no longer afraid of it. And once you stop being afraid of it, for the most part, it goes away. The program I've made reference to tonight is this program here. Now, you're probably sitting there thinking, oh, he's going to try to sell me something. Yes, I am. Folks, I will not give a seminar, no matter how much they offer to pay me, if I can't offer my program. I'll tell you why. Because I am not good enough to get you better from anxiety and depression in 2 hours, an hour and a half tonight. I'm not that good. Do you know what? Nobody is. It's a process. This is a 15-week program. People ask me all the time for the 2-week version of my program. We don't have a 2-week version. It wouldn't work. You cannot overcome months, if not years, of struggling with stress and anxiety and depression in 2 weeks. That is unrealistic. Here's how it works. There are 3 things you need to get better from anxiety and depression. Number 1, you need the skills to control the symptoms and the thoughts. Number 2, you need structure. This is a 15-week program. You spend 1 week with each session. Spending 1 week with each session is incredibly important. Whatever you do, do not jump around. Listen to session 3 today and session 10 tomorrow and session 7 on Wednesday. No, do not do that. You spend 1 week with each session. That is very, very important. The third thing you need to get better is called repetition. Without repetition, you will never get better. You will just get educated. Folks, this is session 3. Session 3 is called Negative Positive Dialogue, How to Manage Your Negative Thoughts. During session 3, I want you to listen to this CD 3 times. Why? A human being only retains 15% of what they hear the first time they hear it. By tomorrow at breakfast, you will have remembered 15% of what I said tonight. That's it. After you've listened to this CD 3 times, you'll be at a 60% retention level. And what you will find is the skills will start to become what we call second nature. What does second nature mean? You start to use the skills without even realizing you're doing it. Let me say that again. Second nature is where you start to use the skills without even realizing you're doing it. And that's when you start to get better. So each session has a 45-minute long CD that I want you to listen to 3 times during its given week. So in session 2, you listen to session 2 CD 3 times. Session 3, you listen to session 3 CD 3 times. Session 4, you can go back. If you're on session 10, you want to hear session 3 again, that's fine. Do not jump ahead, okay? Folks, I recovered from this condition in a 1984 Toyota Celica. I literally had a 20-minute drive to work and a 20-minute drive home 3 days a week at a part-time job I had. And I got better driving back and forth to work, listening to this CDs in my car. I have people tell me they listen to it when they're doing the dishes, making dinner, cleaning up around the house. Each session has a CD. Each session also has about 20 minutes per week in the workbook. And each session also has, this is my favorite part of the program, cue cards. There are 15 cards here. We have boiled the entire program down onto 15 double-sided cue cards. You have the main points to the entire program in your pocket at all times. And you'll never have to say, what if I get stressed? What if I get worried? What if I get anxious? What if I get depressed? What if I forget the skills? You have the main points to the entire program in your pocket at all times. Folks, the program deals with things like how to overcome a panic attack, negative positive dialogue, how to have realistic expectations, diet and exercise, how to deal with anger and mood swings, assertive behavior, how to start standing up for yourself appropriately, how to stop the what-if thinking. What if this happens to me? What if that happens to me? Session 9, how to stop feeling guilty all the time, how to break the habit of worry, how to stop an obsessive thought, medication, how to deal with change, time management, how to keep stress from becoming anxiety, getting beyond a growth spurt. The 16th CD is a relaxation CD. 20% of your management of stress, anxiety, and depression, 20% of your getting better lies in this one CD. It's 20 minutes long. It'll teach you how to breathe properly. When people get stressed and anxious and depressed, the first thing that happens is their breathing changes. Your breathing gets high in your chest. We want to teach you how to breathe from your stomach, low and slow. The CD will also teach you how to relax your body and how to relax your mind. Okay? Folks, the program has been used by over 100 hospitals across North America. Sick Kids Hospital in Toronto has used it for children with anxiety and depression. Peterborough General Hospital has used it for people with anxiety and depression. London General Hospital in Ontario has used it. St. Paul's Hospital in Saskatoon. I got a phone call one day from a man named Paul Benson. He was the head of social work for St. Paul's Hospital in Saskatoon. He said, "Mike, in the last 12 months, we've had 3 staff members go through your program. These people all struggled with anxiety and depression." He said, "These 3 people have so dramatically improved by going through your program by themselves at home." One of the things that's great about the program is it can be shared. We estimate that 3 people go through every program that's purchased from us. So if you purchase the program, in the next 2 years, 2 other people in your life, friends or family members, will go through the program too. That's been our experience in the last 27 years. It's an amazing program for stress. When I give a stress seminar to a corporation, 70% of what I teach on how to manage, not just anxiety and depression, but just stress, 70% of what I teach is right out of that program. So Paul Benson said, "In the last 12 months, 3 staff members have gone through the program. They have so dramatically improved, we would like to fly you and your wife from Toronto to Saskatoon." Honey, we're going to Saskatoon. And why couldn't it have been where you were from, Pasadena, California? And Saskatoon in January. Lovely. So they flew me there. They put a bunch of ads in the newspaper, which the hospital paid for. I gave a seminar, and Paul Benson came to the front of the room at the end of the seminar and said, "If you're here tonight and you struggle with anxiety or depression, we just want you to know that St. Paul's Hospital endorses and recommends this program for the treatment of anxiety and depression." Folks, let me talk about what it takes to enroll in the program, and we will be done. There is a marker here. We had a study done recently on the program by Dr. Job Brown, head of psychology for Brigham Young University. Dr. Brown took 60 people struggling with anxiety and depression. He sent 30 of them to go see a therapist, and he sent 30 of them home with our program. He tested them before they started using what is called the OQ45, a standardized test for assessing someone's psychological health. He tested them before they started. He tested them 15 weeks later when they were finished. The 30 people who went through our program by themselves at home improved more than twice as much as the 30 people who went and saw a therapist. Is it wrong to see a therapist? Not at all. Here's the 2 downsides to therapy. It is very expensive. And when you only see a therapist for 50 minutes a week, it takes an incredible amount of time to get better. I want you to listen to my CDs 3 times a week. I want you to do the relaxation CD 3 times a week. I want you to carry the cards with you everywhere you go. This is a much more comprehensive program than just seeing a therapist for an hour a week. To enroll in the program, folks, there are 2 ways you can enroll in this program. One is from our office in Ohio, and the other is from me. 99.7% of the people who purchase this program purchase it from our office in Ohio. Okay, and they pay $590 for it. 65,000 people a year purchase this program through our office in Ohio. 300 people a year purchase it from me. So 65,000 people a year pay $590 for it. Now, $590 is a chunk of change, but let me ask you a question. How far will $590 get you with a therapist? Not very far. How far will $590 get you with medication? Your average person on medication spends $100 a month on medication. I have counseled someone who was spending $400 a month on medication, and they didn't have a health plan. Through the seminar, the program is $395. You save about $200 through the seminar, through my seminar, through coming here tonight. Now, there is also, I would like to mention, I'll be done in about a minute. I was golfing recently, and a lady walked up to me, and she said, "Are you Mike Glugosh?" I said, "Yes, I am." She said, "I came to a seminar you gave 5 years ago at the Holiday Inn in Burlington." I said, "Great, did I help you?" She said, "Well, I used to struggle with anxiety, and I struggled with depression." And she said, "I came to your seminar, I enrolled in your program." I said, "How are you doing?" She said, "Not only by the time I was done the program did I feel that my anxiety and depression were no longer a part of my life," she said, "I have been off my medication for 4.5 years. We have had a lot of people get off their medication through using the program, but let me just simply say this. Do not ever take yourself off medication for anxiety or depression. Please, I'm not saying that so that you won't sue me. Folks, I have nothing for you to sue. I am not a wealthy man. I make a modest living helping people with anxiety and depression. I say that because I mean it. Do not ever take yourself off an antidepressant or an anti-anxiety medication. When you're done the program, you feel great, go to your doctor, tell your doctor what you've done, you've gone through this program, you've learned how to manage it, you feel better, and work with your doctor if you want to try to reduce your dosage or get off your medication, okay?" I was recently in a Cochrane, Alberta, and a man at the end of the seminar stands up. He says, "Can I share my story?" I said, "Sure." He says, "I'm 53 years old. I have suffered with clinical depression since I was 25. He said, "At one point, I was so severe, they hospitalized me for a month." He said, "I went through this program 4 years ago." He said, "I bought it off television for $590. He said, "I have been depression-free for 3.5 years. And my last story I'll share with you is a lady who came up to me at the grocery store where I live. She said, 'Mike, I came to a seminar you gave at St. Thomas the Apostle Catholic Church in Burlington just recently.' I said, 'Did I help you?'" That's my question I always ask people. "Did I help you?" She said, "I wasn't eating. I wasn't sleeping. I was off work on stress leave." She said, "I was a mess." And she said, "I went through the program." She said, "I'm back to work. I'm sleeping through the night. I'm eating 3 meals a day. And I feel in control of my thoughts and emotions." The program is not complicated, folks. It is based on 3 basic principles: skills, structure, and repetition. If you are interested in the program, please come and see me at the table outside. Does anyone have any questions? And no, I didn't marry that girl. I know all the women are going, "Did he marry her?" No, the throwing up when I thought of her was a bad sign. Any questions? No? Okay. Again, if you're interested in the program, come see me at the table. And I forgot to mention, there is an installment plan. I forgot to write this down. It's $480, which works out to be $60 per month for 8 months. The program comes with a full 30-day refund policy. A full 30-day refund policy. If you do not like it for any reason, you don't even need a reason, you simply call me up on my cell phone, which I give you my cell phone number at the point of purchase, and you say, "Mike, it's not what I was looking for. Thank you, but I would like to return it." I give you my address in Burlington, and you send it back to me, and I give you back every penny you paid. If you want to do it on the installment plan, it's $50 per month for 8 months. So you give me $50 tonight, I will get you started with the program. If you want to pay out all at once, there's still a full 30-day refund policy. It's $395. If you are here and you say, "I need this, but those prices are a financial impossibility for you," come and talk to me. I do not turn people away for financial reasons. When the Midwest Center hired me in 1993, I said, "I will work for you under 2 conditions. You let me talk about God, and you offer me plans for people who sincerely cannot afford the program. I will never turn someone away for financial reasons. So if that's an impossibility, just come talk to me. I will work out something that you can't afford." Okay? Thank you very much. You were a lovely audience. Thank you.